ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, July 24th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins as always, and this morning, a favorite of ours, a longtime collaborator who had a very busy summer. And we're happy to have him on the show today. Jonathan Tannenwald of Philly.com is joining us. How you doing today, Jonathan?
Well, I don't know who had the busier summer, Kevin, you or me.
Soccer-wise, it's definitely you. Life-wise, the last month have been a blur, and I have no idea what happened. I don't even know where my keys are. That's the type of month that it was.
As long as you know where your wedding ring is, right?
Well, that is right here. Right here. Yeah.
Congratulations.
I lost mine a while ago. Jonathan, let's start with where you were recently in France. The U.S. women with a dominant performance, although they had to grind it out, they had to get some results, but I thought they were pretty dominant from start to finish in that tournament. But tell me, Jonathan, how will this tournament be different than the other tournaments they've won in terms of the bounce that's going to propel women's professional soccer, women's soccer in general, forward to match the highs that we've seen over the last month? How is it going to be different this time?
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's one that I wrote about this week, as some of your listeners have seen. This one does feel a little different. It does feel a little bit like this might stick, and that there is more, not just that there is more demand for women's soccer per se, because there is always demand in the wake of a successful World Cup by the United States. Everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon. But there really seems to have been a much greater conversation this time around about, hey, how can I watch these players more than just once every 4 years, or, you know, once every, you know, couple of months when the U.S. national team plays a big game or whatnot. There seems to be more to it this time. And the incumbency, as I wrote and as I asked around about a lot of people around the NWSL, the incumbency is on the NWSL to capitalize on the momentum. And there are some questions about whether they are equipped to do it, but we'll see.
Well, expand on those questions. What will prevent them from taking advantage of this?
The biggest thing that would prevent it, I believe, is a lack of resources in the league office, a lack of the sort of scale of people to do the sponsorship deals and so on, and a lack of, you know, people with the connections so that when the corporate sponsors come around, they know who to call and those people know to pick up the phone. And that's what worries me, and it does make it interesting that an old friend of this program has gotten involved, and that's Soccer United Marketing. Doing a favor to the NWSL, I think it's fair to say, by helping do that Budweiser deal pro bono, and you can argue as to what pro bono means in the context of some's relationship with U.S. soccer, but the point being that they did not take a commission or a fee for that deal, and therefore it means a little something. That, as Amanda Duffy, the president of the NWSL, put it to me, some stepped up and said, we'd like to be involved, we'd like to help, and here's a concrete way that we can do it.
Is it the first step in many in the, I wouldn't say partnership, but into the realization that both parties can help each other? MLS / some can help with infrastructure of marketing, advertisement, labor of people behind right. the scene trying to get contracts. And the NWSL can help MLS in how it portrays itself as a lateral integrated league, which is not now. And that partnership could really go a long way. Is it time for the NWSL to be more present in day-to-day life. We always say, oh, there's no, numbers aren't good for women's soccer, or, oh, we've said that many times, and I have it in front of me. When we have women's soccer shows in the past, the numbers have not been good. This year, it seems like the needle is moving. So is it like the first time in the last few World Cup where all the pieces seem to be fitting in the right spot, like ESPN, some are working, the athletes of the NWSL having a bit of a bigger platform and a bigger status in the mainstream public consciousness of sports in the USA. Are all those little, well, not little, all those steps actually going to make a difference this time around?
Well, it's a lot of questions, and let's step back on the context here for a second. Some has helped the NWSL before in a more, I would say, not an all the way formal capacity, but certainly a more formal capacity. At the moment, say not even at the moment, in recent years, you know, part of the deal to put the games on Lifetime down here was that A&E Networks, the corporate parent of Lifetime, had bought an equity stake in the NWSL, and as part of that, ran all the sales and sponsorships for the league and took a cut accordingly of the proceeds and so on. Part of the reason why the NWSL owners wanted A&E out in the end, I said that a little too bluntly perhaps, but well, so be it, is that they thought that cut was getting a little too big and that the owners felt that they could do more with their resources and their knowledge and drive a little more of the money back into the league. Now, that naturally meant that they had to put up or shut up. And with this Budweiser deal, they have done a bit of putting up. We'll see if they do more of it. The other thing to consider, and this is in terms of the NWSL-MLS integration, there are a lot of people who, over at MLS headquarters, behind the scenes, you know, people who work on the editorial staff, people who work in public relations and various other capacities, who are very much into women's soccer and are fans of the sport, are fans of the NWSL, and really want to see it succeed. And that is genuine. That is not just, you know, MLS going to take over every animal in the kingdom. The feeling is genuine, and I'll give you one example. It is no secret, a matter of public record, that the head of communications for the league, Dan Quartermatch, many years ago worked for the Women's United Soccer Association. That was when a lot of us first got to know him. So there's plenty of folks in MLS, in places. Look, even Don Garber wants the league to succeed. Nobody wants the league to fail. You know, nobody wants women's soccer to fail in MLS. They want it to succeed. But the barriers are a bit substantive, and the biggest one, I would say, is no secret. MLS is an Adidas league, and the NWSL is a Nike league, and as tends to happen, never the twain shall meet. So there's always going to be an element of separation. That's probably all right. And there's going to be elements of crossover, such as MLS teams, MLS owners that own both MLS and NWSL teams, or the USL in the case of North Carolina, and I think that trend is probably going to continue.
Now, when we look at the consequences, or at least the positive fallout of this great championship by the United States of Women's World Cup is not just a trophy. What came out as well is an awareness of the NWSL for the first weekend of play that has surprised me. When I looked at the attendances of the NWSL over the last week, I was floored, Jonathan. I was like, well, this seems like a big, big step up from regular day-to-day operations, and hopefully they can capitalize on this. You alluded to it earlier. The lack of infrastructure from the ticket sales departments to game day operation to make sure that if you have 15 to 20,000 people in your stands, they do want to come back. All teams are not created equal into this equation. You have the Orlando Pride, who are, of course, more suited to receive 20,000 fans on any given day, having the stadium infrastructure and also the marketing and game day operation structure of the Orlando City Soccer Club. Is it a big difference for standalone NWSL team in the league versus teams that do have a sister team or at least a sister partnership for game day operations and that infrastructure? Are we talking about teams that do have the same chance of success in the short-term future? Or are we talking about two teams that will, of course, have a big disparity in their success because of the lack of infrastructure?
Well, I think you make a very good point there, and I think that is part of why the Chicago Red Stars in particular deserve a ton of credit for really pounding the pavement. To get a lot of people out to their World Cup homecoming game, it helped that it was on ESPN2. That got the word out some. It helped that it was against the North Carolina Courage, which put a total of 8 U.S. Women's World Cup players on the field, plus a slew of international players like Sam Kerr, who was getting some well-deserved name recognition over here. It's a lot of work, you know, and it's a lot of work that we don't always see in public, but those of us who work in the media know about it and know how hard the work is and how substantive the work is, and these folks are not just sitting around waiting for the public to come to them. So, you know, we'll see. There is definitely a disparity between, you mentioned Orlando. I mean, if you go all the way to the other end of the spectrum, it's Portland, where they're drawing 19,000 fans a weekend without batting an eye, and they're used to it. But I, you know, where I am is the smallest team of the bunch, Sky Blue, which has been drawing 1,500 fans a game this season, and we're speaking, you know, live on Wednesday. Wednesday night is their first home game since Carly Lloyd came back from the national team. It's against the Washington Spirit, which means Rose Lavelle, Mallory Pugh will be there. And I have no idea what the crowd size is going to be like or what the experience is going to be like. It's a wide open question.
So fair enough, yeah, Jonathan. I want to ask one more on the women, and then we're going to move into to end the conversation with a little MLS talk. But just a simple question to end this. The U.S. women is dominant. We're talking a lot about the strength of the game in the United States, how the NWSL, an American league, can get stronger, so on and so forth. But from a global perspective, is the continuing domination of the U.S. women globally, and to me, even stretching a little bit further ahead year after year, rather than things getting closer, the rest of the world's catching up to each other, but not necessarily to the U.S., is that good for the overall women's game globally if you take your American hat off?
Well, you tell me if it's good for Canada first.
I'm not sure. I don't have an answer to it.
Right. Well, and I ask in part because I look at Canada and what they did this year and say to myself, how far did they deserve to go? I'm not sure. Look, I think it is good because it raises the bar for everyone, which is what needs to happen. And I'm a fan of raising the bar, whether it's the United States or
Jonathan.
Maybe the Canadian Soccer Association was listening in. They cut the wires on us in the middle of that. I think we lost Jonathan for temporarily there. Maybe we'll try and get him back, but
we'll see.
Jonathan.
No, we'll see if Jonathan reappears in a second. But it is fascinating to me, too, that it took a controversy, Dwayne. It took Megan Rapinoe with a controversy versus, like, political controversy mixed with the celebration controversy for a few names to become mainstream. Megan Rapinoe is a mainstream name in the United States now. And I think that's really an important aspect. And, you know, that's not... Let's be realistic. Those controversies actually helped the women's players' notoriety and the NWSL's notoriety via controversy. So that's good.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is truth to the idea that the U.S., well, they're a divisive team in the global sense, right? Either love them or you hate them. There's really not a lot of middle ground. There's not a lot of people who are you know, ambivalent about the United States of America's women's national team. They have a great deal of fans, more fans than any other national team in the world, any other women's sports team in the world. They are by far the most popular. They are also by far the most hated. And they're hated because they win, and there is some jealousy involved in that. American listeners, I will fully admit that there is a lot of that going on. But they're also hated because of the way that they handle themselves and how in your face they are. And I know there are a lot of people out there that will say that there's a sort of a gender double standard happening with that. And I don't completely agree, but I understand where you're coming from with that, because there's a lot of American sports teams in general, regardless of genders, that are hated for that very reason. And it's really a cultural difference more than it is a gender difference, in my opinion. But to put that, you know, Pandora's box aside for a second, it certainly does drive interest. And Rapinoe and the celebrations of the 13-0 game, all of that certainly did draw media attention beyond the normal WOSO, even the normal soccer bubble attention. It drove it. You know, I was on CTV news channel talking about Megan Rapinoe this year, right? This is the type of stuff that it drives, and that does help. My answer to my question to Jonathan was more along the lines of, you know, at some point, does their dominance, does winning 13-0 in a World Cup, you know, forgetting the ethics of how you celebrate and all that, but is that positive? Is that going to make anyone more likely to watch a women's soccer game, a women's soccer tournament? Like, the U.S. women are more dominant, I think, than any men's team has ever been in context, right? Like, we've never gone into a World Cup where we're just like, yeah, they're going to win unless something strange happens. And that's kind of how this World Cup felt. And from a competitive standpoint, you know, it's La Liga. And La Liga does just fine. But maybe, even though I hate parody and I'm long on record for this, maybe this is a bit of what this is about. Is it, you know, if we don't go into World Cup where we really all but one team is realistically going to win, is that going to positively draw more attention? And I don't know the answer to that. I do understand where Jonathan's coming from in terms of driving and excelling and trying to get better and better and better. And I do think that that's naturally positive for that. I think the Canadian women's national team and all the people that support that are deluding themselves if they think that they're anywhere close to where the Americans are right now. And that's something that should drive them a little bit forward. Moving forward,
Jonathan is back with us, and Jonathan, we're going to transition a bit to our other bread and butter, Major League Soccer. And this year, surprisingly, at least when you look at our predictions for the beginning of the season, the Philadelphia Union, top of the East, still. How impressed have you been all season long by the output of performance from this team? You there, Jonathan?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Here we go.
Okay. I'm very impressed. Nobody really expected it. And, you know, we'll see how it ends up. I don't think they're going to win the East when all is said and done.
True.
But for the most part, I like what I've seen so far. I like the way the roster is built. And I think they stand a halfway decent chance, more than that, perhaps, of at least getting a home playoff game, which would be great for them. They haven't had one in 8 years. So that's a big deal. And, you know, but they have some very big games coming up against DC United, twice against Atlanta. They go to Montreal this weekend, which will be certainly a test. And we'll see what happens.
Jonathan, it's that time of year where I like to do my analogies and include a very big sporting event. For me, the Philadelphia Union in the Eastern Conference this year, it's a bit like Julien Alaphilippe at the Tour de France. They're the leaders, all right? They got the yellow jersey. We know that they might not hold on to the yellow jersey all the way to Paris or to the playoffs. But if they get a top four out of it, they get a podium out of it, it's still a lot better than anticipated. And it gives Philly confidence into their building phase, or their plan that they had to be competitive and a very good team in a couple years. That plan is now jump-started. I do like what I see from Philly, and it's not just about Marco Fabian. I think the progression of the entire team as a team and how it's playing is truly surprising in a way that it's stable. And stability in Major League Soccer is so underrated. I really like what I'm seeing from Philly.
Well, so
fair
do
enough.
I. Yeah, so do I. And they need Jamiro Montero back. That's the big question, is when they'll get him. And he's out of sprained ankle, and we'll see if he comes back this weekend. I don't know yet. I'll hopefully know in an hour or so.
Fair enough, Jonathan. We'll wrap you up after this one. We talked about the East. Let's talk about the West real quickly. Was it a bit of a hiccup? We haven't seen a lot of them from LAFC this year. They have seemed to be the far and away favorite to be hosting that MLS Cup at the end of the year. Certainly, I think the Shield, even with that loss to the Galaxy, still looks to be very much in play. But is it fair to say that they are the prohibitive favorite, or are they just the kind of favorite right now?
And
Siri, and can be accessed with the hands-free system from the talk switch. To access.
All right.
Welcome to live radio, folks.
I think I fixed it finally.
There you go. There you go. There you are.
Yes, I'm here. Look, do I think that LAFC is favorite in the regular season? Yes, probably. I cannot shake a hunch that somebody, one of the 2-1 seeds, is going to lose. And that bye is going to end up not helping. And I'm starting to think that the San Jose Earthquakes might just be the team that pulls this off and beat somebody they're not supposed to.
That's what a story that would be. The Earthquakes, one of the stories in MLS so far, have to say, quite impressed by the Profesor, who has lived up to his nickname. And that's it's a great topic as well for another show. Jonathan, thank you for your time today. Thank you for plowing through those little Skype thingies, and we always appreciate talking to you, and we hope you're having a great summer in Philly and around the world, as always.
Thank you. This was a technical difficulties kind of day, that's for sure. Apologies.
But
I did hear your conversation about the arrogance of the female athlete, and I enjoyed it, and I think my view on that is well known, which is that any of the female athletes can celebrate as much as they want. Even the Canadians, when they beat the United States for the first time in 18 years.
If that ever happens.
And I would like to also thank you for not asking me about the League's Cup, because I didn't watch it. I don't care.
No.
Thank you.
I didn't watch it either, and we don't care either. But we do care about you guys, and we'll talk about more of Major League Soccer and the world of football with a soccer perspective after this short break. Thank you, Jonathan, once again, and we'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Dwayne, I know you're not necessarily like a coffee drinker. You're more like a fizzy type of beverage drinker.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I've discovered a coffee grinder, and I've ground my coffee every morning now, just before brewing it. Makes such a difference. I'm such a coffee snob now. Like, coffee's so good, though. I could not live without coffee. I would like probably choose coffee over soccer. That's how much I love coffee.
Fair enough. A few years ago, many of our listeners will know who Sonia Mizio is and know that I am friends with Sonia, have been for several years now. She is a coffee snob as well, and she knew that I did not drink coffee. She forced me to go with her to some little hole in the wall somewhere to drink some real Italian coffee, and I well admit that it was better than the crap that they serve at Tim Hortons or Starbucks.
Yeah.
But still not good enough, still not enough in my taste buds for me to go in there. I do enjoy, a San Pellegrino sometimes, anything that's bubbling, but I'm a basic, you know what, when it comes to my beverages. I like Diet Pepsi.
You're a DBB. Just, you have to find out for yourself what the last B is. And on that note, we're back on Soccer Today. Dwayne, I did not watch the League's Cup last night, but you know what? I lied. I did watch it because it was on TV, and the last few minutes were there. And I'm not going to break down the games. The scores are on your TV screen if you need to know. But yes, The LA Galaxy did win. Well, win is a big, 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 big term. They won in penalties after 90 minutes in the League's Cup. If it's equal, it goes straight to penalty. And LA Galaxy won the shootout, but Cruz Azul beat Chicago like it was nothing, 2-0. Tonight, two more games, but I'm more excited about the Canadian Championship tonight, Dwayne. I'm going to Stade Saputo to see the Montreal Impact face York 9 Football Club. That will be a good match. The Wanderers and Ottawa Fury. Speaking of Friday, on the big show, on the big network, on Big Fox, not FS1. Like, FS1 would be the Two Solitudes, and Soccer Today would be Big Fox. We're going to talk about the KMPL. We're going to talk about Halifax Friday. And I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an exciting story happening out there in terms of what this league means off the field. You know, we talk a lot about what the league should mean to Canadians on the field in terms of development and how this league is positioning itself to be kind of unique within the North American spectrum in the sense that it's going to be a selling league. And that's not something that even Liga MX is not really a selling league. They well sell their best players, but they don't necessarily look to develop to sell as their business model. And the KMPL is set up that way. And I think that's, you know, if you listen to yesterday, you saw Two Solitudes for a little bit of conversation on a player that's leading the Golden Boot race right now, and Tristan Borges, and how he looks to be moving on in January, likely to Europe, and how that money will go a long way to balancing the books in Borges' case. And that's, I know, is the business model of the league, and what a lot of people who keep, you know, floating out that this league's going to fold in 3 years thing are failing to realize is that a lot of the revenue isn't coming from ticket sales. It's coming from selling players. So, but off the field, Halifax is the other side of it. And it's an amazing story. We'll be talking about it on Friday.
You need one or two players sold every year to be fine financially for a long time. And not big players. You're not going to sell Ronaldo for $50 million. You know, you're not going to sell the next Messi. But what you're probably going to do is sell 2 to 3 players a year from $800,000 to $2 million transfers, which are pennies in the scale of football transfers, and are very probable. Like, not just probable, but more, it's more when is it going to happen than if. And it's going to be almost every team at least a player a year. And if you have $1 million a year coming from one player transfer, maybe you get 2 player transfers and you get 1.5. Guess what? You're not folding. $1.5 million revenue yearly goes a long way into reassuring or assuring the perennity of this league.
And for those American listeners or Canadian listeners that don't subscribe to Two Solitudes, or listeners from Albania for that matter that don't subscribe to Two Solitudes, Tristan Borges is a 20-year-old player. He's already been to Europe, a dynamic winger, a bit diminutive. He's not a big guy. That maybe is a knock on him, but anyone I've talked to says he's strong enough to probably, you know, get over that size difference. And everyone knows you don't have to be tall to be good at this sport. Ask the 1A best player in the world about that.
He's going to be suspended for a game, I know. But Messi's not tall. Messi's shorter than me. So I guess it's not about how tall you are, after all.
Exactly. You know, the point is, transfer market has him valued at €200,000 right now. That's going to balance Forge's books if they sell him at anywhere close to that, about $500,000 Canadian. And that's what this is all about. Absolutely. And there's a lot of young players in this league that are in that situation and could be moving on soon. And it'll bump up through the system because, you know, I was talking to some people involved in League One in recent days and was talking and learning about the prospects there for hopefully highlight that either in Canadian Soccer News on this show soon in terms of the players to watch coming into this league. It's exciting times in the KMPL, and I think it's interesting, and it plays into tonight's games where we have the KMPL on the field having an opportunity to prove their worth here and now. And you know, are they the favorites in any of these three games that will take place in the Canadian Championship tonight? I don't know. But
I wouldn't say favorite in any, but they're close in one. I would say Cavalry might be the closest thing to an upside if it happens tonight. York, of course, and Wanderers. We'll see about the opposition. I am concerned about the Wanderers heading into tonight, the second leg. already a goal down and having conceded three goals at home. York conceded twice, but at least it's a draw so far. But they have conceded twice at home against Montreal. Cavalry finds itself in the better position of all Canadian Premier League teams tonight.
Yeah, well, Calgary, the Cavalry would be, in any scenario, anyone else from that side would be looking at it and say, actually, they're in pretty good position. For those who don't know, they're 0-0 heading into Vancouver. It's 2-2 going back to Montreal by York Knight of Montreal, and it's 3-2 for Ottawa. Three goals on the road for the Fury, though. That's going to be very difficult for Halifax to overcome in the second leg, considering they've only scored one away goal ever. So that's a bit of an issue. But nonetheless, what's important, though, I think, and we won't belabor this too much because we go into detail about these games on Two Salties, but what I think is important with these round of games between MLS opposition and USL opposition in Canadian Premier League is that they went in there and showed that they're a professional operation. They didn't go in there and have their ass handed to them. These games were close. Calgary, arguably outplayed Vancouver at home. The York 9 game, Montreal played a mixed lineup. It wasn't a complete turnover lineup, and they got two goals late and had a chance to win that game. And the Fury game against Halifax, and Halifax is among the weaker teams in the league. They were right there. Was Ottawa a little better? Probably. They won. So probably, but it wasn't like a blowout. There was no one could have watched those games and said they didn't belong on the same pitch. And there were people in this country, people that maybe even are listening to this show that thought that way, that probably would have predicted. I know there were people in Ottawa that would have thought they were going to walk in and win like 5-6-0.
Yep.
Because there is this perception, there always has been, that we can't possibly, anything that's Canadian has to be vastly inferior. Not just inferior, vastly inferior. They prove that they're not. They prove that this, it's only a matter of time until a CAN PL team does knock off an MLS team. The more often they play in this tournament, it will happen. It will happen for a variety of reasons. It won't mean that the CAN PL is better than MLS. It's not. It's not going to be for any time soon. But it does mean that just like we see in the U.S. Open Cup, those upsets will happen. This is a worthwhile, valuable league that is doing a worthwhile service and is set up in a different way than Major League Soccer. Tristan Borges, if he was an MLS player, they would be fighting tooth and nail to keep him for as long as possible. And unless you were one or two teams in there, New York Red Bull stands out as a team that might sell him early, but most others would not. Or they actually, in MLS they wouldn't play him. He's 20-year-old domestic.
He's too young.
They would not have played him. Yeah,
he'd be like Ballou. You don't play him, and then you play him like five games, and then you sell him. But no. On that note, if you like to hear Dwayne and I talk about Canadian soccer and the Canadian Premier League and the Canadian men's national team, women's national team, go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork, and take the pledge, take the deep dive, $2 a month, a big financial sacrifice. It can be, but $2 a month does give you access to 4 shows a month, most month, to hear the Canadian soccer talk. And Dwayne and I, this is our exclusive home of our Canadian Premier League content. And until tomorrow, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We'll be back on Soccer Today to talk about the world of the beautiful game, but with a soccer perspective. And until then, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.